we've been focusing for, since the last couple of months, about the precise definition of a Riyaz Dam. So we saw that the term Riyaz Dam has so many different components to it. We spoke about the terms of Hagosh, and we spoke about conscious Iksamim, we spoke about colors, what's considered to be a Dam, what's not considered to be Dam in Halacha. There's one last akud about what constitutes Riyaz Dam before we really move on to the next major topic. The Gemara is a Jerusha Masechas Nida, that a woman is only becomes a Nida if she sees Dam Bibisara. Bibisara comes to teach us, in addition to the Halacha of Hagosh, etc., like we spoke about in the past, Bibisara comes to exclude Riyaz Dam Bishfeferes. If a woman sees Dam, but the Dam comes out through some kind of a tube-like structure, so that's not considered to be a Riyaz Nida. So the simple reading of the Gemara is a woman has some kind of a tube, and blood is coming through that tube, so that's not considered to be a Nida for the purposes of a Nida, even though the Dam, of course, is biological, of course, it's Dam, it's uterine Dam, it doesn't matter. Riyaz Dam Bishfeferes is not considered to be a halachic problem of Nida. Question is, what in the world does that have to do with us? So probably the Maisa, not all that much. But there was a suggestion, very, very fascinating, unique suggestion that was given by Rav Shlomo Zalman. I don't think we mentioned it. We have touched on it very, very, parenthetically at one point, but we never really spoke about it. It was somewhat of a fascinating suggestion that was given by Rav Shlomo Zalman to solve a very real problem in terms of observance of Bichus Nida properly. First, we'll talk about it as if it's reality, and then we'll explain why in reality we don't really do it. So, Shlomo Zalman was coming to address a problem that is a real problem today as well, and that's what's known in the medical textbooks actually as orthodox infertility. But orthodox infertility means it's very simple, that there's nothing wrong with this woman, there's nothing biologically wrong with the woman, there's no reason why naturally she will not become pregnant. The reason why she's not becoming pregnant is because she's observing Hilchos Nida. Now, usually the observance of Hilchos Nida will, if anything, will enhance pregnancy, because the woman will be coming back from the mikveh just about the time before she's ovulating, which will maximize the possibility for becoming pregnant. But every once in a while, you can have a situation where a woman has a very short cycle, and let's say, for argument's sake, a woman has a 22-day cycle, so she's going to be ovulating way before she goes to the mikveh. Usually women ovulate about 2 weeks or so before they get the next birth. Let's say, just for argument's sake, she has a 24-day cycle, so she'll be ovulating around day 10 or so of our cycle. Day 10 of our cycle, she's not going to be going to the mikveh, because first of all, the blood has to stop, and then she has to have siktara, and she can't shiv nikiyim. So most women don't get to the mikveh till about day 13 or 14 or so of the cycle. So if a woman, month in, month out, is ovulating on day 10 or 11, and month in, month out, she's not going to the mikveh till day 13, so you don't need to be a PhD in biology to figure out she's never going to become pregnant. So how do you overcome this problem? So the truth is that that's why it's called orthodox infertility. There's nothing wrong. There's nothing biologically wrong with her. If she wouldn't be from, so then she would become naturally pregnant. So what do you do about this problem? So today, Baruch Hashem, we have much better ways to deal with this problem. Usually it involves some kind of a medication, some kind of a playing and tampering with our cycle a little bit to make our biological cycle more in sync with, in a sense, a halachic cycle. So today, if that's the only issue involved in infertility, that's usually some good ways to overcome that barrier. So Rav Shlomo Zalman, many, many years ago, wrote a kuntres to try to come up with some other kind of idea before the drug intervention that we have today was relevant. So Rav Shlomo Zalman tried to come up with an idea 60, 70 years ago to try to solve this problem of orthodox infertility. The theory that Rav Shlomo Zalman was trying to suggest is as follows, that the best way to solve the problem is to set up a situation that she doesn't become a need in the first place. If she doesn't become a need in the first place, then she doesn't have to wait Shivani Kiyim, and then she can be with her husband whenever she wants. Now, to totally and completely stop a woman from becoming a Nida, so you could do that also. You could do that with medication today also. The only thing that's going to be a catch-22, because if you're going to suppress her period, what you're basically going to do is you're going to stop a whole system. You're going to shut a whole system down. So she's not going to ovulate in the first place. She's not going to become pregnant in the first place. So then you're trying to accomplish is for her to become pregnant. So you have to come up with a real ingenious way of enabling her body physically to become pregnant without her becoming a Nida. So that's quite a task to try to figure out how to do that. So Shlomo Zalman suggested that this halacha of damish referis may be the solution to the problem. Maybe we could do as follows. We can have a woman have her natural period. She can biologically get her period, but our pi halacha will be able to totally circumvent her period. She'll be bleeding and flowing and whatever it is, and we'll be able to say, this woman is not a Nida. How are you going to do such a stunt? So he says, very simple. You can insert a tube, you can insert a catheter, you insert something into her body, and her entire period, all the blood that comes out, the whole 5 days that she's bleeding, will all come derech the Shmelferes, and all the blood that comes there after Shmelferes, even though it's biologically damnidus, it's endometrial blood, we know exactly where it's coming from, it's red, it's no, there's all the other conditions necessary to make her into a Nida, but quirk, this Xeris HaKosov of the Amish Shmelferes will exempt them from the parish of Nida. Now, obviously, we're not going to do this for every woman. I mean, in theory, every woman could do such a stunt. I know most women probably would not want to be walking around with a catheter for a week to avoid Hilchas Nida. But in theory, we have this very, very big yetzim in a klal, and becomes there's no other way to do it. So Shlomo Zalman, 60, 70 years ago, came up with this idea. Maybe we can invoke this principle of the Amish Shofaris. But there are a few things that have to be fine-tuned in order to for this principle to work. One of the things that have to be worked out properly is what we spoke about already a couple of times. You have to discern precisely, to the centimeter, exactly at what point is the point of no return. At what point does the woman become a nida? Because the din of dam shofaros tachara means that when the blood comes out, and we have to define what that means, comes out of, whatever the blood comes out, it's got to come out through a shofaros. At the moment of truth, which is the moment that is metame the woman, that asks the woman, that's kaveh, that determines that she's a nida, if the dam comes through the shofaros, then she's not a nida. So when is that point? So we spoke about this in the very first year. When the dam comes from the bayis apanimi to the bayis achitzon, when the blood comes from the inner part to the outer part, we just have a small problem. We're not sure where the inner part is, where the outer part is. So we know that the uterus is part of the inner part. That's obvious. We know that the vaginal area is part of the outer part. That's also obvious. What we don't know is everything in between, i.e. the cervix. Is the cervix, that small part of the extension, in the sense of the uterus, tzava harechem, that's referred to in Hebrew today, is the cervix considered to be part of the bayis epinimi? Is the cervix considered to be part of the bayis achitza? My nafkamina, all the nafkamina in the world. If you hold that the cervix is part of the bayis apnimi, so then the woman only becomes a nida when the blood exits the cervix, the exterior part of the cervix. So then all you have to do is put the shvoferes up to that point. So you have to put the shvoferes into the cervix, and when the blood comes out, calls them out that it's in the uterus, it doesn't mean anything. Calls about it in the cervix, it still doesn't mean anything. It's still inside, it's still internal. She hasn't become a nida yet. Only when the blood exits the cervix on the way out of the body, if you have a shvoferes there, and the blood comes through this catheter or something, through this tube, so then she never became a nida. However, if you hold that the cervix is the bayis achitzon, that the cervix is part of the outside, so then the moment of truth is in the internal os, what they call the internal opening between the uterus and the cervix, and that's the moment of truth, so then you have to stick the shofaros all the way there. So instead of having a shofaros going to the cervix, it's got to go basically into the uterus. It's got to go into literally the biological uterus in order for the woman not to become an ida. That's a big difference. That's a big enough green aldina, how far this tube is going to go. So Shlomo Zalman wrote a kuntras about 40 pages in this kuntras, is to try to prove where the pi hamokar is, which is the point of truth, which is the makom in the woman's body that she becomes a nida at that point. So Rav Shlomo Zalman was makel. He had a whole chiddush to be makel, that it's 50 rayas to try to be makel to show you that the outer part is the moment of truth, is the point of truth, and therefore, according to Shlomo Zalman, as long as this catheter is just merely going into the cervix, so that's okay. Close by the blood's in the cervix doesn't bother us. When it comes out of the cervix, it's coming out through the shmoferes, and that type of a re'iyah doesn't declare the woman to be a nida. That was Shlomo Zalman's whole theory. So again, this was just to get an idea how young Shlomo Zalman was when he wrote this, is that this wasn't even written as his own sefer. It was written as an addendum to a sefer that his uncle wrote. His uncle wrote a whole sefer in Hilchos Nida, and then he asked his young nephew, Shlomo Zalman Orbach, to write, I don't know the date of this particular kuntras, but it was a long, long, long kuntras trying to sell this idea for these women who are having difficulty becoming pregnant, to have them insert these shvoferes, and they don't have to even insert them all that far in, as long as they go into the cervix, and all blood that comes out of the cervix comes right through the shvoferes, and Shalom Yisrael, the woman is not considered to be a need. That was of Shlomo Zalman's whole theory. Many poskim disagreed with Shlomo Zalman on different nekudas. Some disagreed with the place that he insisted that the shofaris is going to be. Some disagreed on the whole understanding of the shofaris. The Shulchan Aruch Harav seemed to have a whole different understanding. The Shulchan Aruch Harav understood that, who predated Shlomo Zalman, obviously, Shulchan Aruch Harav understood that the head of the shofaris doesn't work on regular period blood. It only works on if the blood is caused by the shofaris. A whole different understanding of what shofaris is all about. The Shulchan Aruch writes, if you have a regular period and you stuck a tube in there and the blood's flowing through the tube, so he says, l'mal l'mal, that's still considered to be a nida d'oraisa. So again, Rav Shlomo Zalman takes 20 of the other pages to refute that understanding of Shulchan Aruch. At the end of the day, Rav Shlomo Zalman tried to present this whole story. This particular procedure is not done today. I don't know if anybody who ever does this, and I'm not sure anybody ever did this. I'm not sure whether this was ever niskabel, whether anybody actually practically, whether it was even medically practical to do it, I'm not sure. But I was once giving a shiur about this in California a while ago, and it was like a session that I had together, me and an OBGYN. So I was talking about this, the approach of Shlomo Zalman. So the OBGYN is a firm fellow. I looked at him like I was from the, like I'd come from Mars. So I asked him, I said, have you ever heard in your medical career of anybody pulling off such a stunt? He said to me, he doesn't recall ever hearing this actually happen. I said, it shouldn't surprise me. I'm not sure it ever did happen. And it doesn't happen as much as that's for sure. Nobody does this anymore. But we have much easier, safer, more efficient ways of helping the woman to become pregnant rather than shofaris. But it was a very real suggestion, at least what Shlomo Zalman did put forth many, many years ago.
Did the OBGYN say that it could possibly work if you, that the technique is a workable technique?
He was just so astonished that someone actually was advocating it at one time. But I don't think, Shlomo Zalman was very, very up to date, with technology and medicine. Shlomo Zalman was mamish, He spoke to the doctors. He had so much, of a chush for this kind of stuff. So he didn't stop make this up out of nowhere. So it could be people did use it at one time. I don't know. I never heard of anybody who actually did it. But Shlomo Zalman did try to sell this idea.
What did they use?
What did they do 60 years ago? They had problems. Rechonami was talking about big problems 60 years ago. Rechonami. Well, we talk a little bit more about Shivanikiyam, so we'll talk about there was one opinion in the poskim that wanted to argue maybe you don't have to observe Shivanikiyam if the woman can't become pregnant. Shivanikiyam is under the Rabbanan, it's not really a Zava, and we don't really follow that. Rav Moshe didn't follow that. Rav Shlomo Zalman himself addresses that and rejects it. So we'll talk about different eitzes that were that were thrown around. Sometimes what happens is that even women who have short cycles, they don't always, not every month they have short cycles. Sometimes you can have a woman who's having a lot of trouble becoming pregnant, but every once in a while she may get a little bit of a longer cycle, so they may look out. So again, it was a problem. It was a real problem. It's still a real problem. It has to be addressed to the best of the way medically and halakhically today as well. So now we move on really to the next topic. And that is the following, a very, very important area of Hilchos Nida. What the Gemara tells us is that sometimes a woman can find dam. She can find dam either as a kesem, or she can find dam as a bedika cloth, or find dam at the time of tashmish, or any other time that she may find dam. And the halacha is not concerned with this dam because this is not considered to be dam and hamlokha. It's not considered to be uterine blood. It's considered to be what we call dam makah. So any time that the halacha declares that this is considered to be makah blood, some other kind of a wound, some other kind of a source of the bleeding is somewhere else besides what nida blood is, so then this woman is muteris. So she's muteris totally. The chetchila, we assume that if it's labeled in halacha as a makah, then there's nothing to be concerned with. There are two major parts in terms of answering shailos in terms of hilchos makahs. One is to define a makah properly. What is considered to be a makah in halacha? And then number two, how do we know that we have a makah in front of us? It means what right do we have to assume that we have a makah? Now, the second half of the question is we're going to have to analyze it from the point of view of the Gemara, the Rishon and the Shulchan Aruch, and then we're going to try to play it out l'maisa, how it means for us, because Baruch Hashem, in today's world, we have different techniques, much better techniques of identifying makos than there were in the days of old. We have we have equipment we can look and see much more than the days of the Rashi and Tosfos were able to see inside. And then the third part of this sugya is assuming that we think we have a halachic makah and we've ascertained that's probably where the blood's coming from. What gives us the right to ascertain that? Who exactly is telling us this information? It's usually that the information is going to be given to us by doctors, which opens up a whole question in of itself, which goes way beyond Hilchos Nida, but plays out lemaisin uchas nida as just what exactly is the status of the doctors in halacha. If a doctor tells us some information, does that have halachic significance? Do we have a right to believe the doctor? Do we have to assume that the doctor knows what he or she is talking about? Touches on issues of from doctors, not from doctors, Jewish doctors, not Jewish doctors. You know, what exactly the doctor is saying, what the expertise of the doctor is. So that's going to be a topic, kind of a subtopic, and within this general topic of makos. So we got a lot of work for us in the next. This is the main next main sugya called the sugya of damakos. So comes the Gemara, Imasechas Nidin tells us that the concept of a makkah is obvious. That you don't need a chiddush to tell us this. It's obvious as a concept of a makkah. The Torah says that dam that comes from the makkah, he gills us b'kor damel. Dam that comes from the uterus is dam nida. If a woman has her fingers bleeding, she's not a nida. She's not a nosebleed, she's not a nida. So obviously, if the blood is coming from somewhere else, she's not a nida. So ma'naf kemina, whether the blood is coming from her nose or whether it's coming from a part of the body that's close to the makor, but it's not the makor, it's not the uterus itself. So let's say a woman has hemorrhoids, so it's close to the makor, but it's not the makor, it's a different part of the body, it's a different organ in the body. So of course she's not considered to be a nida. What if the blood is coming from something a little bit closer, it's maybe part of a reproductive system, but it's not the uterus? Say she's bleeding from the vaginal area. She's got some infection in that part of the body. So even though it's presenting to us the same way that uterine blood would present itself, it's on the same pad, it's on the same underwear, it's on the same particular cloth, but tachlis, if we know for a fact that this dam is not coming from the uterus, so that's for sure okay. So that's what the Gemara calls a makkah shebet tzadin. Tzadin means literally on the side. It's the dam is in the same part of the body. It's coming out of the same opening of the body, but it's coming min hatzdadim. It's not coming from the uterus, so that's for sure not considered to be a problem. That includes dam that's coming from the cervix. Dam from the cervix is also generally considered to be makkah. We'll see exactly how that fits into the pattern of things as we go on. So that's one type of a makkah. Makkah shebet tzadin. If it's not in the uterus itself, then you don't need a great chiddush to tell me that a makkah shebet tzadin isn't a problem. But now the Gemara is a chiddush in Maseches Nidin. The Gemara says, what if you have a makkah shebet mokor? What if you have a makkah? You have some kind of a wound, some kind of an irritation in the mokor itself, in the uterus itself. So the Gemara is a chiddush. The Gemara says that's also considered to be a makkah, and the woman will not be a nida if she has dam that's coming from a makkah shebet mokor. There's a quirk we'll talk about this also a little bit later on, hopefully. Even though it happens to be that the makkah shebet mokor doesn't make the woman into a nida, the blood itself is tame. When we spoke about nida, dam nida is an avatuma, it's a davar tame. But in terms of the woman's status, it doesn't alter the woman's status. We'll see, that's going to become important a little bit later on. So you have two different kinds of makas. You have a makah shebet tzadin, which is bichlal not from the uterus, and you have a makah of a makah shebet mokor, which is a makah in the uterus, which is, even though it's physically in the uterus, doesn't bother us because it's dam min a makah shebet mokor. There is a major machlekes aposkim about the following shiloh, very important shiloh, which is as follows. What exactly does this term makkah shebet mokor mean? What would that halacha be as follows? Let's say a doctor goes into the mokor, goes into the uterus, and does some kind of a procedure. Goes in with a knife, goes in with a surgery, he does it with a needle, whatever it is, and he draws blood, he takes out blood physically, using some kind of an instrument, he draws out blood, which is endometrial blood. It's the same blood that in 2 days from now, this woman would get her period, the blood's coming from the same blood vessels. It's the same thing, it's exactly the same thing. So is that called a makkah shebet mokor or not? So, comes the Chazon Ish in one place in a sefer in Yerideya, and he writes that that's considered to be a makkah shebet mokor. That's exactly what Chazal was talking about. Is any blood that comes out in the same way that the blood would have come out if you take a knife and make a cut on a finger, so it would bleed. So if you take a knife, you make a cut in the endometrial lining, so it's bleeding. But that's not chuznina. That's a makkah shebet mokor. It's the same blood. It's the same capillaries, the same blood vessels. So what? That's called the makkah shebet mokor. The woman is totally muteris. That's what the Chazon Ish writes. Seems to write in a sefer chuznina in Yerideya. The problem is that there is a letter from the Chazon Ish that was written to it was Dr. Wallach. He was He was the chief OB GYN at Shaare Tzedek Hospital back in the 1940s or something in Eretz Yisrael, and there was a series of letters between the Chazanish and this from head of the department about this very shaila, about is that considered to be a makor shebe makor or not? Could one argue that a makor shebe makor is only considered to be a makor shebe makor if it doesn't involve that same endometrial blood? If it's the same blood, it's the same lining, it's just instead of the lining coming out naturally during the regular period, it's being induced by a knife, it's being induced by a biopsy needle or something. So that's all chazni, that's the same thing, that's not a makor shebe makor. Makor shebe makor is something that's different. So the Chazan Ish in this letter apparently sides with Chumrah. The simple reading of the letter is the Chazan Ish is writing that this is a problem, that this is considered to be not a makor shebe makor. This is makor, this is damnit, this is the same thing. Mali, if this endometrial lining comes out naturally, mali, if it comes out through a needle or something, it's the same exact blood up the halacha. The question is, what do you do with this apparent contradiction in the Chazan Ish? It's hard to know what the answer to that question is. So there was some poskim who assumed the halacha, like it says in the Chazan Ish Sefer, that the definition of makor shebe makor means you make an incision, that's a makor shebe makor. I don't care where the blood's coming from. There's loch patli, there's endometrial, none of them. It doesn't matter. If it's coming out through an incision, that is called makor shebe makor. The woman is absolutely mutera. So Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach paskin this way. According to this understanding of Reb Shlomo Zalman, let's say the following procedure. A woman goes for a procedure called endometrial biopsy. So, again, I don't know the details from the medical point of view, but like biopsy, so they're putting in some kind of instrument, a needle, whatever it is, and they're drawing out, they're taking out some of the endometrial lining, which is causing the woman to bleed. So, if they wouldn't do this procedure, in 3 days, no, the woman's going to get a period. Whatever, next week she's due to get a period. So, is she considered to be a needle from the procedure itself? Now, this comes very important, because very often endometrial biopsies are done on women who are ready, could be ready post-menopause. So, the woman's 60 years old, and she's getting an endometrial biopsy, and she's bleeding from the biopsy. Is she a needle? Is she not a needle? Does she have to wait 5 days, count Shiva Nikim, go to mikvah, it works? But you say, no, this is Dam and Hamakha. So Reb Shlomo Zalman was Mekel, like it says in the Chazan Ish Sefer, in Yerideya, that's called Makor Shebe Makor. That is the case of Makor Shebe Makor that Chazal was describing, and that doesn't make the woman into a needle. And others were chayshish lahachmer in this. Others were machmer in this, and said no. The ikra din is really like the Chazan Ish writes in this letter. The letter, those who are interested, the letter is printed in the sefer, the biography of the Chazan Ish, in the sefer Per Hador. That's if you want to actually see a copy of the letters. I think I don't have the sefer, but I think somebody made me a copy. I think I have it at home somewhere. The letter of the Chazan Ish, which was a series of about five different letters back and forth, where he basically seems to paskin against what he says in the sefer. So according to the Machmirim, these kinds of procedures would make the woman into a nida. This is a common shaila. This touches on many, many different kinds of procedures. A common application of the shaila is as follows, that there is a test that's done. It's usually part of a standard fertility workup. It's called a dye test. The reason why I call it a dye test, and I don't pronounce it by the official medical term, is that for the life of me, I cannot pronounce the term. It's a hipsy, pinga, something or other. I don't know, maybe... There you go. Okay, now you know why I can't pronounce it. So we call it the dye test for short. So basically what it involves is it's an instrument that shoots dye into that part of the body. The idea of the test is to check whether the fallopian tubes are blocked or not. If she's not becoming pregnant, so one possible reason, maybe the tubes are blocked. So the dye shoots up and goes through, and then they study the dye with whatever mechanism they use to study the dye. If it goes through, then you know that the tubes are clear. So this particular test, this is the more modern version of how to check whether the tubes are clear. The old-fashioned method of doing it, they used to shoot air. What was that officially called? You know what that term was called? They used to shoot air through the tubes, and they used to study in something. I don't know how, but when the Chazan Ish wrote this letter to this Dr. Wallach, that was the test that he was talking about. What he used to call the Bedikat Avia B'Shoferet. That was the Hebrew term that they used to use to see whether the tubes were blocked or not. The common denominator between these different tests is that very often this causes uterine bleeding, but the blood is being caused by something menachut. It's being caused by some kind of an instrument. It's being caused by in a sense, not a real incision, but something similar halachically to an incision. Possibly. So is that considered to be make the woman into a nida or not? So, l'chora, That should depend on these letters of back and forth of the Chazon Ish. If you hold like it says in the Chazon Ish in the Sefer, this is damak, a finish. If you hold like Rav Shlomo Zalman, this is damak, a finish, and there's nothing to worry about. If you hold that this is considered to be not really damak, this is dam nidus, this is the real McCoy, because this is uterine blood, this is endometrial blood, so I don't care what brought this bleeding along, but this endometrial lining is bleeding, that's a need to finish, end of discussion. So this is a shayla, this is a very real shayla. What makes the shayla very, very difficult is because this particular procedure with the dye test is inevitably going to be done with a woman who's having difficulty becoming pregnant. And the way, just in terms of her body, the timing that this test has to be done, it's usually between the day 5 and day 10 of a cycle when this test has to be done in order to show up properly, whatever the results have to be. The problem, of course, is between day 5 and day 10, if you do the math, that's usually right at the beginning of Shiva Nikiyam. So let's say, for argument's sake, they do this test on day 7 of her cycle. So as soon as the period really ended, so now as soon as she's up to day 2 or 3 of Shiva Nikiyam, and they do this test, and now she starts to bleed for 2 days from this test. So if you hold Lakula, okay, great. So she just continues Shiva Nikiyam, so she's bleeding, big deal. But if you hold that this is Dam Nidus, so then this is obviously going to mess up her count of Shiva Nikiyam, so she's going to have to start again. Now she's going to start again, so that's a nice way to see she just lost that month. So if you have machra the shayla, that by definition is going to cost a woman a month in terms of fertility issues. Yeah, it's a serious, serious shayla. The Masorah that I have on this particular test, this particular shayla, is as follows, that it depends how much bleeding it's going to be. If it's just an issue of ksamim, some women don't bleed that much from this. If it's just a question of ksamim, so then by ksamim shom lahakel, we could be a little bit more makel on uchus ksamim. We would probably recommend that the woman wear colored anyway, or wear something else, the pants, or something that wouldn't be subject to ksamim. So we'll you know, even though it's shivin akiyim, we'll look the other way at some of the ksamim. Once it becomes more than ksamim, if the woman is bleeding heavily, that often the woman has to put on a pad because of the procedure itself, so now she's bleeding significantly, that's already in the category of what we spoke about at the beginning. The first year, that's more of a flow, that's more of a re'iyas dam of agasha, and then we're potentially in the realm of a deraisa, then maybe we'd have to be more machmer this. So it's a little bit of a case-by-case basis, and that's the psach that I usually follow. Yeah, a woman can become a nida even postmenopausal also. But if she still has an endometrial lining, she still has a uterus, it's just that it's not monthly. Right, it doesn't matter. Let's say you have a woman who has what's called breakthrough bleeding, it's also not from her period, but any bleeding that comes from the endometrial lining can potentially make her into a nida. So what I would tell such a woman to do is like this, that I would tell her to do whatever bedikah she's going to do the morning before the procedure. I would tell her to hope and pray for the best. That's not going to be that much of blood, let her wear colored or a pad or something. And we'll see. If she's mamish bleeding a lot, I would tell her that she has to be, I tell her that she should be machmir, that she should assume the shivan akim are over, and 2-3 days, whenever she's ready to start again, she'll start again, and she lost that month. If it's just a spot here and there, so then I would tell her, don't do bedikas for a couple of days till everything heals, everything clears up, and then at the end, day 7, whatever it is, then you do continue with the shimon akim.
Why should the amount matter?
Because the amount is puts us back to day 1, that we don't really know what hargosha is. Back to the opening shia, we said that min haTorah, there's no difference between a lot of blood or a little blood. It's the difference between hargosha and a nakav hargosha. But b'zman hazeh, we can't use those terms anymore because nobody has real quote-unquote hargoshas today. So the consensus, the poskim is that when a woman has a significant flow of blood, we assume that's masking hargosha. We assume that's already not a kesem anymore. So different poskim, different shiurim, how much is considered to be a significant amount of blood. But kuliyamo pligya, if a woman's mamish flowing blood today, and she says, I don't feel anything. So she never feels anything. So a woman could say, I got my period, I'm bleeding for 5 days, I don't feel anything. So you're going to say she's muteris? It can't be.
I'm saying
that if it's a lot of blood, then it's a deraisa, so we're going to be more machmir. If it's only a kesem, then we'll be a little bit more makel on the shiloh. That's why. It's not a conceptual difference, it's just lemaisa, one's a deraisa, one's a derabanan. And if it's only a kesem, then we can play around with the kesem by putting on savonim and things to avoid it from becoming a problem in the first place. I had a story once, Maisa Shoy, that a couple called me, and they were having fertility issues. It was exactly the shayla, and they were a couple. It wasn't one of my tamidim, not someone who, you know, they happen to always, they know me from somewhere else, so they would always call me in a chazdita question, but it's not, you know, someone who would always call me every single shayla in the world with other things. So they called me about this particular shiloh. So I said to them, I said, listen, I said, you know, my rebbeim or Nodil Hachmer and the shiloh. I said, there are mekilim on this. There are other poskim out there who are making on the shiloh. I said, you're not mechuyev, you know, I'm not saying you're meshubah to my psak. I said, if you want to know what I tell people they should have to wait the extra, lose out the month and try again next month. So the couple said to me, listen, Rabbi Zalowski, you're the one who we ask a shiloh to. If you said it's us, it's finished. That's good enough for us. So, okay. So I told him, I said, look, Kadosh Baruch Hu should Yimali Mishal Aslivchem Utova, Mesiris Nefesh, to keep your Chosnida, Kadasa Chadin, Kadosh Baruch Hu should Yensi Atfilos, Kachav, the next month the woman became pregnant. So I'm not a Rebbe, I'm not a Chassidish Rebbe, I'm not a Lipish Rebbe, I'm nothing. So it wasn't my bracha, it was the Schos that they were kept the Chosnida properly. Anyway, each case is that's right, you never know. I'm starting to collect the truth is, I didn't tell you all the brachas I gave people that weren't Makuya. You know, I only tell you the ending, the good ending stories. Somebody once said in a different context, of Shaduchim, if you throw enough pieces of macaroni against the wall, some of them are going to stick. So if you throw out enough brachas, some of them will work. Maybe we have to edit some of this. But there is a problem, something that bothered me for a long, long time, about these poskim who were machmir, that anything that involves the lining itself, we can't just machavech, we can't just ignore it and call it a macha. That's considered to be a chasnida. What was always bothering me was, so what does macha shiva mocher mean? So tell me medically, give me an example of a macha shiva mocher. So my non-medical mind started to think, and I said, there must be a way for a woman to be bleeding from the uterus, which is not involving the endometrial lining. Oh, that must be the answer. That must be the answer. Must be, if it's endometrial bleeding, so then it doesn't matter what caused it, that's not a machmir shiva mocher. It must be a zahecha timtza, that the woman's bleeding from the uterus, and there's no endometrial lining coming out of it. That was my layman's suggestion. So I spoke to some doctors about it. They told me, what do the words mean? No, am I right? Does it make any sense? There's such a case.
I don't know enough about it.
I mean, if the little that I understand is that the endometrial lining is around the whole uterus, so by definition, it's going to be, it's like saying I'm bleeding from the inside without cutting my skin. It means, of course, some of the blood is coming from the endometrial lining, so how are you talking? How could it be such a thing? So I was thinking, and then what I think the answer is as follows. The answer is very simple. I think that according to these poskim, the way to define makash and makor means cervical blood. Remember, we had a whole machlokes, is the cervix part of the makor, not part of the makor. So what this must mean is that when the blood is uterine blood, that's a chasnida. I don't care how it came out, with incision, no incision, natural, not natural, pills, doesn't matter. If it's uterine blood, it's ulcer. All uterine blood is endometrial blood. Of course it is. Makashib and makor means cervical blood. We know that already. We know that cervical blood is not damnida. How do we know that? That's what this Gemara is telling us. That notwithstanding the fact that the cervix is part of the makor, according to these poskim, like Rav Shlomo Zalman, notwithstanding the fact that the cervix is part, integral part of the makor, but it happens to be that the cervix does not have endometrial lining. I think that part is right. I'm pretty sure we got that medicine part right. So that's exactly what the Gemara is telling us. If the blood's coming from the cervix, so then it's not a problem. Even though it's in the makor, that's a makor, shiva makor. If the blood's coming from the uterus, then it is a problem because that's not makor, shiva makor, that's the makor itself. That's al chasnida. That's what I thought the answer is. And if that's the case, then I can begin to make some sense out of the Gemara says, in Masech Chasnida, nemenes isha lomar maka yeshti b'mokor. A woman can come and tell us that she knows where the bleeding's coming from. She can sense, she knows whether this is, there's a maka or not. So she can tell about whether it's endometrial or whether there's a maka and it's in the uterus. It's inside her body. How in the world is she ever going to know such a thing? But if you're going to tell me that all the Gemara is saying is that it's a difference whether it's coming from all the way inside or whether it's coming from the cervix, again, I can't tell you for sure whether a woman can make such an assessment either. It sounds more believable. It sounds more realistic that she knows. She knows she's irritation. I don't know, whatever she knows. But you can begin to understand what the Gemara means when it says, the menes ishalom ha-macha yeshti b'mochor. At the end of the day, Lefini is daiti. There's machlekes apelskim, real machlekes apelskim, about all these procedures that are done in the uterus that cause bleeding. Is that damnidus or is it not damnidus? According to the machmirim, we got a serious problem. According to the mekilim, just ignore them all. Biopsies and the dye test and the air test, everything, just forget it. So everything's at the government. No problem whatsoever. But everybody in the world agrees, if it's cervical bleeding, that's zechem mutter. For sure that's mutter. There's no shayla that cervical bleeding is mutter. That's not endometrial. It's not shaykh that should be a problem. So now the question becomes, it's all nice and fine in the Olmos Elyonim, how does it play out in terms of Lamaisa today? In terms of Lamaisa in the days of the Rishonim, how in the world is a woman going to know where this blood is coming from? The woman just did a bedika, she finds down in the bedika cloth. How in the world does she know where this blood is coming from? She just found the kesem. How does she know where the blood's coming from? She just found down Lecha Tashmish. How in the world does she know where the blood is coming from? So the Rishonim have a big machlokes about two different terms. One is a maka hayadua shemoti dam, and one is a maka she'ein yadua shemoti dam. The difference is obvious. One has an ein, one doesn't have an ein. Maka hayadua shemoti dam means the woman knows for a fact that she has a wound already. She knows she has an irritation. It was diagnosed. Either the doctor actually saw it, or she had other kinds of testing. She knows she's got a maka somewhere. She's got a maka in the cervix for sure. She's got an irritation in the cervix. She's got an irritation in the vaginal. She knows she's got. Well documented that there's a maka there. And she knows that it's a type of a maka that constantly is bleeding. It's a maka hayadua shemaitzidam. That's one type of a maka. Then you have a second kind of a maka. It's a maka she'ini yadua shemaitzidam. That means she knows she's got something fishy going on. She knows she's got some kind of an irritation, some kind of infection, something or other. But she's not really sure that it's bleeding. She doesn't know for sure. Nobody actually saw that it was bleeding. Not 100% sure that it's bleeding. So she knows something's fishy there, but it's lav dafka that is actually producing blood at any given moment. So what's the difference, if any, between these two? So obviously from a medical point of view, you'd rather have a makah she'ein yadua shemotzidam, but from a halachic point of view, you'd rather have a makah yadua shemotzidam. Because if you have a makah that's yadua shemotzidam, that's the greatest makah possible. Not medically, greatest halachic makah. I know for a fact I'm gushing, I know I'm bleeding from a makah. So that's a great hochacha. I just found blood in a bedikah cloth. I'm trying to figure out where it come from. Is it coming from the uterus, or is it coming from the cervix? And I know for a fact my cervix is bleeding, so I don't need a PhD to figure out. So obviously this blood is coming from the cervix. Obviously this blood is mutter. If it's a maka she'eino yadua shemotzi dam, then it's a lot much more subtle, then it's much more difficult. How could you say with certainty that, oh, it must be coming from the cervix? You don't even know that your cervix is bleeding. You know that you have some kind of an irritation in your cervix, but if you don't have documented that your cervix is ever bleeding, so that's much shakier grounds to stand on. So when we speak about a maka, a woman is tola b'makosa, that's the lashon in the Mishnah. They're tola b'maka, she can just ignore it. It's maka blood. What does that mean? It's a maka hayadua shemaiti dam? Even a maka she'eni yadua shemoti dam is sufficient. So this was a big machlekes of Rishonim, machlekes in the Rashba and the Mordechai. So the Rashba assumes that as long as she knows she has a maka there, she knows she's got something fishy going on, she doesn't have to know this maka is bleeding. It's not relevant. She doesn't have to do medical tests to figure out the bleeding. She knows she's got an irritation there, she knows she's got an infection, she's got something fishy going on in that part of the body. Any blood she sees, tola b'makosa. She can assume that it came from the maka. Comes the Mordechai and says, nothing doing. Comes the Mordechai and says, it has to be a maka sheyadua shemaiti dam. You need a real achokha. This is a courage. This is serious stuff. You can't just say, well, it's probably okay. It's probably coming from the maka that you don't even know is bleeding in the first place. It has to be a maka yadua shemaiti dam, well documented, it's bleeding, kind of a maka. Then and only then do you have a right to ignore it and just say, yeah, I'm bleeding, it's red and everything, and it's still mutter because I know it's coming from a maka. It has to be a maka yadua shemaiti dam. So machlek is Rishon. How do we pass in the halacha? So machlek is the mechaber in the Rama. The mechaber, not surprisingly, is quotes the Rashba, who we usually follow, and the Rama quotes the Mordechai. Mordechai is the Ashkenazi Rishon, the Ashkenazim, the Chachmi Ashkenaz, that are Mesorah l'chumra on this. The Rama paskins l'chumra on the Shaila, that basically you require a macha hayadua shemaiti dam. If it's not yadua shemaiti dam, then we have no right to be make. That's how we pass in the halacha. That if a woman just comes and says, oh yeah, no problem, I found blood on my particular cloth, but no problem, I have an irritation there. So we ask the woman, does that particular irritation bleed? I don't know. So that's nothing. That's meaningless. That's not a maka. It's got to be a maka that she says, I know it bleeds. How do I know? The sonogram told me, the doctor told me, the midwife told me, the nurse told me, somebody told me. I have some way of documenting, some real assessment that this maka is a bleeding maka. Then and only then is it called a maka yadua shemaiti dam. Then and only then can we just ignore all bleeding that's taking place. This is the psach of the Rama. The Shach has an important comment on this Rama. But the Shach writes that a very, very common shaila. The Shach writes, what if you have as follows? What if you have a makah? The woman has a makah. She knows she has a makah. She knows that it's a kind of a makah that bleeds. But can she swear on the Sefer Torah that it's bleeding now? Does she know that this particular makah is open right now, that it's mamish gushing blood right now? She doesn't know that. She knows it's a makah shedarko lahotzi dam. It's a makah that's a type of a makah that does bleed if irritated, if touched, if it comes into contact with something, then it's a kind of a makah that bleeds. Well, where does that fall into the category? Is that makah number one? Is it makah number two? Is that the makah, kind of makah that we wouldn't rely on? Or is that a makah that we'll say, yeah, that's good enough? So the Shach is makel in the shayla. The Shach says that even though she doesn't know it's bleeding now, bashehu sham, but she knows that it could bleed. It's a kind of a makah that can easily open up. That's also good enough, even according to the chumradic version of what's necessary to be called the makah. This is mamash maisim mechalyam. This shayla is all the time. Just that, so 2 days ago, a woman called me frantic that she's beginning of pregnancy, so she's not supposed to be bleeding beginning of pregnancy. What happens? So very often, beginning of pregnancy, the cervix gets a little bit sensitive, it's a little soft, whatever it is, and all of a sudden she's after tashmish, she's finding she's bleeding. She's bleeding after tashmish. It's okay. So first you have to go from the medical point of view. Is maybe it's more serious than this. Maybe there's some issue with the pregnancy. Okay. So Baruch Hashem, assuming that clears out, sonogram, fine. Now the question is, so where is this dam coming from? So if this dam is uterine in source, so that's a problem. Even though she's pregnant and she's not getting a period, and Musulaka's dam doesn't matter. If it's uterine blood, so that's potentially dam nidus. Maybe the blood is not even coming from the uterus. Maybe she has a makah in that area. What makah does she have? So the doctor examines her, and the doctor says, your cervix is very sensitive. Your cervix is very soft, which is very common in your pregnancy. And it's possible that that sensitive cervix may have been irritated with shas tashmish. Very common. So that's why you're bleeding. That's what the doctor says. Now, could the doctor swear on the Sefer Torah that that's the reason why she's bleeding? Does the doctor even see that the cervix is bleeding right now? No. She didn't get to the doctor until the next day. So the cervix is not bleeding right now. It's not a makah hayadua shemaitzi dam bashehu sham. But it's the doctor, having seen the cervix, having seen 1,000 of these kinds of patients before, can tell you, I'm telling you with certainty, not that that's where the blood's coming from, but I'm telling you with certainty that you have a cervix that looks like it could bleed. It's irritated, it's soft, it's sensitive enough that it could bleed b'shas tashmish. So according to the Shach's revamping of the Ramah, revamping in the Mordechai, that's called the makah yadua shemaitzi dam. That's wonderful. So it may be not wonderful for her, but in terms of what's needed, that's wonderful. So even though she's bleeding, but she has tashmish, there's a lot of blood, it doesn't matter. That's called the makai adush metidam, and that would be good enough. So that's what we pass, and that's what we generally know today. We're knowing like the Ramah with the Shach's revision with the Shach's revamping of the Ramah. So we're machmir that it's got to be a makah which is yadua shematidam, but we take a little bit of the cooler version of what that means. It doesn't have to be yadua that it's bleeding now, as long as it's yadua that it could bleed, that's a type of a makah that generally bleeds, that's good enough to be labeled as a makah yadua shematidam. So hopefully, Meitzah Shem, in the next year, again, the next 2 weeks, there's no shiur, we're going to have to try to analyze a little bit further when you have a lot of these fakers. What if we're not even sure we have a makah? We're not sure where the makah is, so how do we go about dealing with some of these shanas lama? So this